when you take that suffering and you figure out the stand that it's going to give you, and you figure out how to take that stand and put it into your life mission, the suffering disappears. That baggage that you're carrying, that wound on your soul, disappears. This is the second biggest gathering we've had. The last biggest gathering was in Tallinn, Estonia. We had, and this one was insane. How many of you were there? Tallinn, Estonia. So we had 1,100 people. This was an experiment. 1,100 people moved to a city for 1 month with their families. And we created basically our own community within the city, took over the biggest conference center, brought in around 100 different teachers, tossed the biggest parties in the city, had some of the most prominent people in Estonia take the stage, from rock stars to the woman who is about to become prime minister. She just won the election. And we created this huge personal growth community for a month. It started because of the daringness of the people in the Mindvalley community. I mean, how many people decide that they want to break this idea that you stay rooted in one place for the rest of your life? And these people decided that they want to spend 1 month every year with their kids in a completely different city and see the world. So grateful that we have you guys who want to go beyond just learning online and are actually taking really bold steps to come together, connect in community, in growth, and in that process, make ourselves better and better so that we can do our best job for the world. So anyway, thank you guys for coming all the way here. We have 250,000 students on our Mindvalley online programs. We have 2,000 of our most active students, including you guys, who show up in the real world, and you guys are our best students. So please give yourselves a round of applause. So I like to start reunion with just my own feelings on personal growth and share with you what I learned over the last 1 year. As Mia said, I like to travel, meet interesting people, and then connect with them, understand what processes they're going through, their way of seeing the world, their methodologies for healing or growth, integrate that within my life. Some work, some don't work, and those that work, I like to bring it back to the world and magnify. And in this last year, I've been meditating on two rules. I really wanted to figure out if I could sit my son down and explain to Hayden what are the two overriding philosophies that are going to make him truly live life. I'm not talking about success. I think that's a BS term that our education systems tell us we should chase at the expense of everything else. I'm talking about just being human, living life. And I find that these two rules are the ones that I feel most drawn to. Now, before I get to the two rules, you must understand this really key idea. A lot of people outside Mindvalley don't get this, but this is a particularly powerful idea that will help you grow. It's the idea of the difference between transformation and learning. So that, can you guys guess which kid is me in that picture? That's my mom. We are standing in a river, I guess, somewhere in Malaysia. Or I guess a freak flood happened. I don't remember. I'm the kid in blue. The rest, I don't have any brothers or sisters, so the rest are my cousins. So my mom was a public school teacher in Malaysia. She was actually the best English teacher in Malaysia, which is why I speak English, unlike most Malaysians, with a more international accent. So I was really, really grateful to have a mom who was a public school teacher because she instilled in me the love for learning. And I did well as a student. I would go to school, I would get good grades. Having a mom as a teacher meant you could not slack on your homework. So good grades were like really important to me. But most of what I learned in school, I later forgot. Most of what I learned in university, at the University of Michigan, I later forgot. That is learning. Learning is temporary. You can learn facts, you can learn figures, but you forget them. Transformation, on the other hand, is beyond learning. Transformation is what is missing from our education system. Transformation is the idea that you start seeing the world in a radically different way. Transformation is going from the beliefs of your religion or your culture or the beliefs instilled in you by your parents and then realizing that there are other ways of viewing the world. And the unique thing about transformation is that once your mind expands, it can never again shrink to its original size. Once you understand that aging is optional. You can never again go back to the old you. Once you understand that you can succeed in life through love and compassion, you can never again go back to greed. Once you understand that love can be painful, but it's part of the journey and it's one of the most fulfilling things a human being can experience, you never again fear relationships. And so transformation is what Mind Valley is about. Transformation is what we're trying to get in schooling systems and now companies around the world. And so thanks to this community that has been so engrossed in transformation, going through our programs on the Mind Valley app, we are slowly, through you guys, being pulled in different businesses and companies. A couple of Mind Valley reunion students last year from Finland pulled us into schools in Finland. So some 200 to 700 Finnish students took Jim Quick's quest. And we found that 6 months later, 80% of them saw a persistent grade increase. Thanks to other people in this room, we got invited to speak at Google. We just got invited to speak at Microsoft and to bring our programs into these companies. And what we're really trying to do here is patch that gap in the education system that emphasized learning and standardized testing and certificates, rather than truly teaching us how to see the world in a unique way. So you got to understand, schools can teach you biology, but they can't teach you to basically live to be 150 by slowing down aging. Schools can teach you, they can teach you values in some way, but they can't teach you to truly tap into your spiritual core. And really, that is what we are seeking to do at this event and through the Mind Valley system. So how do you spark transformation? The funny thing is this, right? Transformation is initiated by two things. So for most people in the world, transformation comes through cause number one, a disorienting dilemma, which means, bam, life comes and hits you. You go bankrupt, but through that, you learn what to do to make your next business successful. You end up in hospital, but through that, you learn how to take better care of your health. That is transformation through pain. But there's also transformation through what is called gradual accumulation of evolving meaning schema. And that sounds so boring, but it basically means this. You start seeing the world in a new way because of the people you meet, because of the books you read, autobiographies, curated communities like this spark the second type of transformation. It's slower. It's slower, but it's a lot more beautiful. It's a lot more joyous. Now, the problem, though, is that both these forms of transformation don't happen at a rapid pace. Most people go through suffering to transform. And most people, their evolving meaning schema, their visions, their worldviews evolve very, very, very slowly because they are stuck with the same community. They are stuck in that same city. So here's what it looks like when you put it together. First, the disorienting dilemma, right? The Rumi said, wound is the place where the light enters. And I love that quote. The disorienting dilemma is what all of us experience in our life that forces us to growth. Rumi also said, you who cannot take a good rub, how will you ever become a polished gem? Isn't that beautiful? So the disorienting dilemma is a really, really, really powerful idea. So powerful that Google did a study and they found this. So this is an extract from a book called Exponential Organizations. Google, and it says, Google recently demonstrated that its best employees were not Ivy League students, but rather young people who had experienced a big loss in their lives and had been able to transform that experience into growth. According to Google, deep personal loss has resulted in employees who are more humble and open to listening and learning. That's crazy, right? Google literally found that when you go, that their employees who are the best employees are ones who have gone through some form of suffering. How many of you here can recognize that idea of suffering? Because you've gone through it and you've emerged from that fire as a better person. So, congratulations. Turns out it's part of life. And now you're eligible for Google. So, the second thing is evolved meaning schema over time. So evolved meaning schema over time is what personal growth is about. Evolved meaning schema over time means that we are engaged in this process of growing and evolving ourselves. But when you put them both together, for the average person, transformation is unpredictable and slow because we have to wait for that suffering. Or it's slow because we are developing this evolved meaning schema in a slow accumulation over time. Our goal is to accelerate that, to get you guys to make that leap. That's why you're here. That's what this event is about. It's about making a rapid leap into transformation. So, what I want to share with you are these two rules. But to understand these rules, we must give you a roadmap. Roadmaps are really beautiful because they show you how to get to where you want to go faster. And the roadmap we're going to use is this idea from Abraham Maslow. Any of you guys familiar with this? So Maslow created this pyramid called the Pyramid of Human Needs. And the yellow line points to love and belonging. All of us need love and belonging. We need our tribes. We need our societies. We need our family. We need to feel like we are part of something bigger. But once you have that fulfilled, once you are no longer lonely, your needs evolve. The next need that we go to is esteem. Esteem is really interesting. Esteem is what our education system is educating us to do. Esteem is when you care about your career progression. You care about that fancy car. You care about recognition from your boss. You care about looking really good in Lululemon yoga pants. That's esteem. Now, the funny thing is, most people, because our society hardwires into this, most people, when they go through personal growth, it is esteem that they are looking for. But here's the thing. When you start going deeper and deeper and deeper into personal growth, it's no longer about your yoga ass or your promotion or about the recognition. You get to something called self-actualization. This is where the magic happens. Self-actualization is the idea that you grow for the sake of growth. It is your growth that motivates you, not external validation. This is where we want to take people. This is where you want to take your children. Not growing for someone else's opinion. Growing because as a soul, you know that the human experience is here. We are here in human bodies to learn and to grow. But there's a level above this. So the funny thing is, when Abraham Maslow first published the pyramid, he stopped at self-actualization. Later, he went back to his work and said he missed a level. And that level is what we call self-transcendence. Self-transcendence, I want you to take a moment and try to guess what you think this is. Okay? Self-transcendence is the idea that you go beyond yourself, that your growth is important, yes, but you're going to use that growth. You're going to use that fit body, that incredible mind, those connections you have, that powerful cognitive ability to put together ideas, to go forth and fix the world. Self-transcendence is a really powerful idea. It means that we are not here just to be our best selves. We are here to be our best selves and fix the world. Fix the world around you so that our children inherit a better world than what we did. This is what Mind Valley is about. So if you are trying to explain what Mind Valley does, we're beyond learning. We're getting to transformation. And the highest level of transformation is where it is not about that's higher salary or the great body or looking good or someone else's validation. It's about, just like people on the spiritual part, your growth is what is important to you, and you're using that growth to fuel your desire to fix the world. So let's go deeper into two of these, right? And I want to bring some ideas from some previous speakers who were here last year at reunion. Self-actualization, achieving your full potential. Sri Kumar Rao took the stage at reunion last year. How many of you here remember Rao and his speech? So after that speech, Rao got off the stage. He went back there where I was sitting, and he said, "Vision, so love this community, and I'm so glad at what you guys are doing because MBA programs suck." And I'm like, "What do you mean?" Because Rao is one of the top MBA, teachers in America. He says, "They don't teach us what matters." And I said, "What matters?" And he says, "What we got to learn in our schools is this. We got to learn that your business is not about your business. If your business hits $1 billion, who cares? The question is, did you grow? If your business fails, who cares? The question is, did you grow?" And then, I quote him, he said, "Your business is nothing more than a vehicle for your personal growth." So, that gives us rule one. Your thing is not about your thing. Rather, your thing is nothing more than a vehicle for your personal growth. Rao extends that. Your children are not about your children. Your children are a vehicle for your personal growth. Your relationship and your marriage is not about your relationship and your marriage. It's about your personal growth. And your business and your career is about your personal growth. Rule one liberates you. Rule one makes you realize that failure is fine. Because what is failure? Suffering. And what does suffering do? It makes you freaking awesome. So when you embrace rule one, you never forget who you truly are. A soul here on a learning opportunity. And we learn through success and we learn through failure. Rule one is the essence of self-actualization. So I want to teach you a word. Rose. Your rate of self-evolution. I love that word, rose, because I just finished watching The Little Prince on Netflix. Anyone seen that? Or read the book? So anyway, Rose is a character in that book. Rose stands for rate of self-evolution. This is one of the biggest markers of how good you're going to do at life. If you want to get into a relationship with someone, make sure you find someone who is growing their rose. If you want to raise great kids, make sure you raise kids who are growing their rose. If you want to succeed at life, make sure you're growing your rose. You're growing your rate of self-evolution, which means you are spending that time every day to nurture yourself, to heal your body, to meditate, to go to the gym, to learn how to learn, to get better at life, to engage in personal growth, and not just do the 9-to-5 like everyone else. So write that down, rose. And ask yourself this question every morning. How am I going to grow my rose today? Now, the second rule comes from this idea, self-transcendence. And the second rule also stemmed from a Mindvalley teacher whom you saw on stage last year. His name was Neil Donald Walsh. Any of you guys remember Neil? Reunion last year. I know you guys loved his speech. You gave him incredible ratings. So that picture was taken at Mindvalley University in Barcelona. Back then it was 300 people, not like 1,100. Neil gave a two-day workshop. And somewhere in that workshop, one of you, and that person may even be in the room, I don't know, raised her hand and said, Neil, what do I do if I wake up every day and I just feel sad and I feel depressed and I feel worried? And Neil said, I'm going to give you one word of advice. And what he said then sounded a little bit too in your face or too like unsympathetic. He said this. He said, I want you to remember that your life is not about you. Rather, your life is about the lives of everyone you touch. When you walk into a room, you don't walk into that room. You walk into that room to heal the room. And when you make your life beyond you, you will stop waking up sad and depressed. That leads us to rule two. Your life is not about you. Rather, your life is about the lives of everyone you touch. So I want to teach you a little trick that we do in our Mindvalley office. It's called the snapping finger trick. If you agree with any of these philosophies that I'm going to share and integrate, just snap your finger, okay? Okay, so this gives me like a auditory clue that I'm on the right track. If you disagree with me, just stay silent about it. Just critique me in your head, okay? So rule two, your life is not about you. Rather, your life is about the lives of everyone you touch. I share these two rules with you because I want everyone in our community to get to self-transcendence. Only when we see ourselves in unity can we truly go forth and create a better world. And you're going to find that self-transcendence is an underlying theme at everything about Mindvalley and everything about what we do at this conference. This is why you will see that we are bringing Marianne Williamson on stage. I mean, she's all about that. She's kicking people's ass to be activists. And one of the new rules that we've established in Mindvalley is that the authors that we bring on must stand for something. They must stand for something greater than just their learning. If you are teaching health, don't just teach health. Take on the food companies that lie to people about sugar. And so Anadea Judith, stand up please, Anadea. That's Anadea Judith. So Anadea's coming on Mindvalley, and she's the... Anyone, you guys have probably heard of Anadea. Thank you. Anadea So Anna De Gea is one of the top writers on energy, on the human energy body and chakras. And I met her in Sausalito about 18 months ago. And we met in a cafe. And I was trying to figure out if we should work with Anna De Gea. And she handed me her business card. Can I tell this story? And her business card said, activist. And immediately I connected with her. And I showed her my business card, which said, CEO, activist. Anna De Gea cares greatly about the ecology and global warming. And I want to work with teachers like that. Because if you're just teaching people how to get a better body or how to succeed at their career, you're operating at the self-esteem level. That isn't the highest level of Maslow. We want teachers who move you to give a damn. And that's why we work with Anna De Gea. And that's the new rule for all the teachers we bring on Mindvalley. You have a stand. And if you don't, it's cool. But we want people who have a stand. Snap if you agree. So, likewise, we want you guys to have a stand. What do you stand for? What is it that you can turn as your purpose so that you can go forward and fix the world? This is a question that puzzles so many people. And it puzzled me for a while as well. And I understood the answer when, over the years, talking to many people, I realized that the answer actually comes from our wounding. The clue for your mission, for how you're about to go forth and fix the world, comes from your wounding. Let's go back to what Rumi said. The wound is the place where life enters. Think back to a time that you were deeply hurt. Maybe you were arrested for something you didn't do. Maybe you had an abusive partner. Maybe you had an abusive school teacher. Maybe you were treated unkindly. That wounding is often our soul's way of giving us a marker for what we are meant to do in the world. You can take that wounding and turn it into your mission. You can take what is it that hurt you and use that to fix the world. So let me give you an idea of how you would do this process. And I want to share this story with you guys. Some of you guys know this story, but for those of you who don't, it's the story of why Mindvalley is Mindvalley. So when I first started Mindvalley, I started it in New York, and everything was going good. I'd been living in the U.S. I was born in Malaysia. I had been living in the U.S. for 9 years, and I loved America, and I really, really, really was excited about settling here and creating a life here. And then September 11 happened, and all of us remember September 11. I was in Berkeley at that time. We never forget the images on TV. But it was what happened after September 11 that really rocked my life. Around 18 months after September 11, I was living in New York, and I was running a beautiful office space over there. And I was the director of sales for a .com. And my .com, the guys who ran it, they were superbly incredible patriotic Americans. They wanted to open a beautiful office in New York. They were based in San Fran, and help boost the New York economy, help create jobs. So I was there hiring people and creating this incredible company. And then one day I show up at JFK Airport, and I get called aside. And I'm told that I can no longer just enter the country. I've been added to what back then was called the Special Registration Watch List. Around 72,000 men who were born in Muslim countries were added to that watch list. It didn't matter if you were Muslim or not. Not that that matters. I'm brown and I don't shave sometimes, so I could look Arab or Afghani or whatever. But what this meant is that I could no longer use certain airports. And before getting on a plane, I had to go for a two-hour interrogation. Getting off a plane, I had to go through a two-hour interrogation. But the worst was this. Even if I chose not to travel anywhere, every 28 days, I had to line up for 4 hours on this massive line outside the government office in New York. I remember it was January or February. It was freaking cold. The line was 4 blocks long. And I had to report to the government to be fingerprinted, to have my photograph taken, and to give them my credit card so that my purchases could be tracked, you know, in case I bought fertilizer or something. So I don't blame anyone. And the immigration agents who processed me, they were such wonderful men and women, but, you know, they felt helpless too. They felt it was wrong because I was as American as they were. We would talk about Michigan football. We would, you know, talk about things. And they enjoyed speaking to someone who was so familiar to them. But it was painful for me. And 3 months after that, I decided I couldn't live in America anymore. I still loved America, but I couldn't live in the country if I was being forced to live like I was on parole. And that's when I moved to Malaysia. And that's when my suffering gave me my mission. And that mission is not just education. That mission is to unify the world, which is why Mine Valley in Kuala Lumpur now has people from 54 different countries working there. Because I want to create a world where we don't have to put people in boxes based on how they look or their skin color. And I was so pissed off at what happened. I was pissed off at the U.S. government. Now, it only lasted 5 years. In 2008, President Obama ruled the whole thing unconstitutional and dismantled it. So thank you, Obama. Trump wants to bring it back, which is why, and I disagree with that. I'm not going to vilify someone for having different political beliefs, but I disagree with that. And I disagree with border walls, and I disagree with calling asylum seekers illegals. And part of what we want to do at Mine Valley is help push forth this idea of unity. Again, the suffering leads to a vision. So I want to share with you a video that we released last year when Trump announced the Muslim ban. And many of you have seen this. It's called Stand Up. And this video will help you understand why we do what we do. But we made this video because I went through suffering. And I don't want my daughter growing up in the world where she would ever get labeled or ever get prevented from entering a country because of how she looks. My daughter is half white, half Indian, so she looks Middle Eastern. So I just wouldn't want her on a list. Watch this video.
I stand for love.
I stand for peace.
I stand for unity.
Education.
The environment.
Equality.
I stand for refugees.
In an age of dangerous politics, don't let bullies force you to sit down.
To tell you, you're being too political or unpatriotic.
When you speak your truth.
To tell you,
you can't stand tall.
Or that you don't belong here. Speak up. Rise up.
Unite.
And to those who dare to stand,
so why do I play that video? I'm not asking you to be political. That video presented, though, a list of things that you could take a stand for. LGBTQ rights, women's rights, refugees, unity, the environment. And remember, you don't have to build a business in that area. We're an education business. But Mine Valley, if you notice, takes a firm stand for human unity in how we hire, in how we present our events, in the fact that everything we do is global. It's human unity. So you can have your business, whether it is in auto mechanics, or it's in engineering, or it's software development, or it's a barbershop, but you can add a layer on it for something that you stand for. And this is one of the best ways to take your suffering and turn it into a superpower so you can rise up to self-transcendence. I take a stand for unity because, as I said, my daughter is a beautiful Middle Eastern looking girl. And I want to make sure that she doesn't grow up in a world that's going to vilify her for how she looks. So one of the things we're seeking to do at Mine Valley, and this is something I'm super excited about. Yeah, we're working on events and great tech, but it's a concept called mimetic inoculation. You guys have heard of how we can inoculate people against diseases, right? Science has gotten there. Now, I believe, we need to look at how can we inoculate people against dumb ideas. How can we inoculate people? How can we inoculate people against the BS from the food companies, right, that tell you to eat certain things. The BS from companies like the cola industry that market diet soda, the gall of them to use the word diet, when modern science shows that diet soda like basically messes with your gut bacteria and is worse for you than sugar soda. Those of you who are diet cola fans, so sorry to ruin your day. How can we take a stand against politicians who use fear to win elections? Because we all know that leaders who lack vision have to win votes through division. How can we take, how can we inoculate people against the ideas from the capitalist, consumerist world that tells you to buy things that we don't need? So, mimetic inoculation simply means that we want to help get powerful, transformational ideas out that act as a force field against dumb ideas. So, for example, when we launched WildFit last year, we also launched a campaign against Nestle. It became the biggest news in Malaysia, because Nestle is the single biggest company in Malaysia. We launched a campaign against Nestle because they were lying to the public, offering a drink that was 40% sugar and calling it a health drink and encouraging mothers to give this to their kids twice a day. As a result, the health ratings for this drink were dropped from 4.5 stars to 1.5 stars. Right? So we took on Nestle and we fucking won. That was powerful. And even though Mindvalley's goal is to now get into companies all around the world, we are going to take on companies. We are in Malaysia and we took on the biggest company in our country. And we're taking on other companies next. I can't say who, but it's coming. It's mimetic inoculation. But this is the next level of mimetic inoculation. I was speaking at the Student Leadership Congress in India. The organization was called ISAC. They had gathered student leaders from all around the world. And I opened one of their books, they are like brochures, and I saw this. It was an idea of global citizenship. I'm going to read it out to you. Global citizenship typically defines a person who places their identity with a global community above their identity as a citizen of a particular nation or place. The idea is that one's identity transcends geography or political borders, and that planetary human community is interdependent and whole. Humankind is essentially one. I so love that idea. So the next thing that we're aiming for, this is a 20-year goal for Mindvalley, is an idea that we call the Earth Flag. And it is the ultimate form of mimetic inoculation. Once we create a flag for planet Earth, which doesn't exist right now, a flag that when we colonize Mars, this is the flag that should be on the rocket. So an American kid, a Mexican kid, an Afghani kid can look up and go, that's my rocket. An Earth flag is missing for planet Earth. It is something that holds us back as a species. And so I went to speak at the UN a couple of months back, and I noticed that at the UN, there are all of these other flags. There is no Earth flag. And the Earth flag is a campaign that we're going to launch. We want to create a flag that represents planet Earth. This, interestingly enough, is a form of mimetic inoculation. Because once you understand that you are part of something much greater than your country, you give a damn about global warming. And politicians like Trump will lose their power because they rely on the lie of national identity to win votes. So, education is the first thing that we're doing, but our greater cause is to take nationalism and place it firmly into the garbage bin of human history. So anyway, that vision comes from being on that watch list. And my question back to you is, what was your suffering? And what are you going to do about it? Think about that moment where you were hurt, where you were vilified, where you felt betrayed or lied to, where you were punished unfairly, where you were like stomped and put down. What value are you going to pick up from that? Suffering is the breadcrumbs to your mission, to why you're here. And what is it going to make you stand for? Martin Luther King said this, and this is one of the most powerful quotes, because if you don't get this, personal growth becomes about the cute yoga ass and not beyond. Power without love is reckless and abusive. We see this in our political systems all the time. Power without love. And love without power, though, is sentimental and anemic. We see this in the spiritual movement. Oh, it's about meditating and being one with my crystal. That's love without power. Power at its best is love implementing the demands of justice, and justice at its best is power correcting everything that stands against love. That's where I would love to see you guys play. And the great part is this, when you take that suffering and you figure out the stand that it's going to give you, and you figure out how to take that stand and put it into your life mission, the suffering disappears. That baggage that you're carrying, that wound on your soul, disappears. Viktor Frankl pointed this out. Suffering ceases to be suffering at the moment it finds its meaning. So, let's do a quick recap. Rule number one, and this was the rule that Sri Kumar Rao jolted me into at reunion last year. Your thing is not about your thing. Rather, your thing is nothing more than a vehicle for your personal growth. And that's great. It means you're going to grow your rose. But you got to do something with that. You need to combine that love with a form of power. And that is rule number two. Remember that your life is not about you. Rather, your life is about the lives of everyone you touch. Now, you got to put both of it together. Because when I see people I know here in the room, people often are on different ends of the spectrum. They are people who are really passionate about personal growth. And they look amazing, and they are super joyous, but they are not changing the world outside them. And we need those people to fix the world. And then there are people out there who are so desperately fixing the world, the incredible aid workers and the people who volunteer for the UNHCR, and they are wonderful, amazing people, but their lives are wrecked because they've forgotten to take care of themselves. I want you to remember this analogy. The heart is the most selfish organ in the human body. Because the heart takes all the good blood for itself, and then it sends the rest of the blood to your lungs and your liver and your kidneys and everything else. So I guess one could call the heart selfish because it holds on to all the best blood. But the fact is, if the heart did not do that, the heart would die. And if the heart died, it would take down everything else. And so you must first work on yourself, rule number one, and then work on the world. And when you do that, our guest speaker, Marianne Williamson's quote, starts to become more and more relevant to you. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. You're playing small. Doesn't serve the world. So I want you to snap your fingers like you don't give a damn if you refuse to play small. So I wanted to leave you with that message. Thank you. And what I want you to take in for the rest of this next 2 days is ideas on how you can continuously grow your rose, and ideas on how you can take on new models of reality, new visions for the world that you can go out there and co-create. Thank you.